Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. You're listening to Adagio in A Minor, performed by John McCutcheon on hammer, dulcimer, and piano, with Stuart Duncan on fiddle. The piece appears on John's new CD, 22 Days, dedicated to Vedran Smilovic, the man known as the cellist of Sarajevo, who performed Adagio in A Minor for 22 days in the bombed-out ruins of his city to call attention to the horrors of the war in the Balkans. The music on that CD was written over a period of 22 days on the 20th anniversary of the vigil. In the liner notes, quote, "For those among us who materialize out of the mists of ugliness and hatred when some small act of beauty is required." I'm Glenn Moberg. John McCutcheon is our guest for the next hour on Route 51, and you'll be hearing his music both recorded and performed live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. Tonight, Thursday night, John brings his Winter Solstice tour to the Rothschild Pavilion, recreating his classic 1984 holiday album with a world-class group of acoustic musicians. It's a benefit for the Neighbor's Place Food Pantry of Wausau. John McCutcheon grew up in central Wisconsin. His music has touched many of our lives, and if you'd like to touch him back, our phone lines are open for you at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. John, it's so good to have you with us today. Tell us about the piece we're listening to.
Well, this is a... Well, first of all, it's great to be back here in Wausau. It's my hometown, and I get back as often as I can. It's nice to be in a Wisconsin Public Radio studio.
It's good to have you here, man.
Well, this is a piece that closes out my my latest album, 22 Days. As you told your listeners, my friend Vedran Smilovic, who was the principal cellist for the Sarajevo Opera Orchestra, in late May of 1992, responded to an attack on the last working bakery in the city of Sarajevo, in which 22 people were killed. He showed up the following morning at the site of the bombing, at the hour of the bombing, in full tux and tails, and set up and played Albinoni's Adagio in G minor, actually. Which was the lone piece of music that was salvaged from the National Museum after the firebombing of Dresden.
During World War II.
During World War II, yes. Played this one piece and left. And showed up the following day at exactly the same time, played the one piece again and left. And it was, to me, it personified my favorite quote by Leonard Bernstein, which is, "This will be our response to violence, to play music more beautifully, more passionately, more determinedly than ever before." And I've gotten to know Smilovic in the years since. I wrote a piece about his action called The Streets of Sarajevo, which he was kind enough to play the cello on when I finally recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
This was the final piece I wrote in the 22 days cycle, because, you know, when I sat down, I had no intention of having a product at the end of it. I wasn't writing it to make an album. I was just writing it. It was the process of writing, just to honor my friend. But after writing songs for 40 years, you know how to finish stuff.
Uh-huh.
So at the end, I had no instrumental, and I thought, well, you know,
You put a lot of instrumentals on many of your albums.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And I'm kind of known as an instrumentalist, in some circles. So I wrote this piece, A minor seemed appropriate, because it wasn't G minor.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to step on Vedran's, territory there. And I wanted to do something that I was just sitting around playing the fiddle one day, and this piece just kind of tumbled out. I mean, the interesting thing about this is not the first time I've done an intensive writing project, but this is one when I did it for one particular reason. And the subject material, as you know from this album, is all over the place. There's some funny stuff. There's some stuff from the day's news.
And there's nothing in it specifically about the war in the Balkans.
No. And that wasn't even the point. So at the end of all this, I thought, well, oh, this, when you write a lot, it's sort of like being, I know, I was an athlete, or still am. And those people out there who can relate to that will understand when I say, when you're in shape,
mm-hmm.
you're more flexible, you can do things that you can't do when you're on your first day in the gym, or on the soccer field, or playing in your company softball team.
Well, deadlines have a way of focusing the mind, don't they?
They do. and after 22 days, I felt really creatively in shape. And so this thing just, you know, every time I sat down to do something, there was something interesting coming out. And writing is a process of discovery for me.
Right.
As well. So this is the piece that came out.
We're going to play quite a bit of music from that new CD. But before we do that, tell us about the show tonight at the Rothschild Pavilion. Beautiful old place. It's so wonderful that it's up and saved from the wrecking ball.
I know. And it's, you know, to tell you the truth, as the band was driving over there, I said, you know, I grew up in Wausau, and I have never been to the Rothschild Pavilion.
No kidding.
No. And I came.
So you missed Buddy Holly.
Yeah, I did. I did. And I walked into the place, and the first thing my road manager said was, this is not at all what I thought this was going to be. It's really lovely, and they've got a great sound man in the neighbor's place. People were there. This is, for years, people have bugged me to reprise live the music on this album, Winter Solstice, which I released in 1984.
Classic holiday album, Christmas in the Trenches,
right,
has become a holiday classic.
So about a year ago, I thought, well, this would kind of be fun. And quite practically, you can't get any gigs in December unless you have a holiday show of some sort. So, you know, after 40 years of hanging out with, you know, musicians who are far, far better than I am, I decided, well, let's pad the, you know, let's bring in some real ringers.
Yeah.
So
you've got some world-class.
On
acoustic instruments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These are people who are giants in the folk music field. There's Lori Lewis, a tremendous singer and fiddle player and songwriter from the Bay Area. I've been an admirer of Lori's for many, many years, though we've been a lot of places together but never played together. And John Jennings, who has produced many of my albums, was Mary Chapin Carpenter's producer and guitar player, and longtime collaborator. And Mark Schatz is probably the most well-known acoustic bass player in the folk and bluegrass
right.
music field. And he's also a tremendous banjo player, a great dancer, and a ham bone king. So he brings lots of stuff to the table.
And this show is tonight at
the Rothschild Pavilion.
At the Rothschild Pavilion. And tickets are available through the Performing Arts Foundation. 842-0988 is their phone number. That's 842-0988. And the Rothschild Pavilion is a big place, so I imagine if you make a decision at the last minute to go, there will probably be room for you there.
I have no idea, to tell you the truth. That's not my end of the job.
But there you go. Why do you think that album, Winter Solstice, is still so significant to people 30 years after its release?
You know, if I knew that kind of stuff, I'd can it and make $1 million. At the time, my record company, Rounder Records, asked that I do a Christmas album. And there weren't a lot of Christmas albums in the folk music field at that point. And I suspect they figured I was going to do, you know, Hark the Herald Angels Sing on Hammer Dulcimer.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted something that was heavy on the Hammer Dulcimer.
As they should. It's a beautiful instrument. And you don't hear much of it.
And there weren't a lot of Hammer Dulcimer albums at that particular time. But I've always, you know, sort of taken the left-hand turn when I could. I wanted to create, whenever I've done an album, I've wanted to do a recording that I could stand to listen to repeatedly. So I gathered some dear friends of mine, the band Trapezoid, which unfortunately doesn't exist anymore. They had accompanied me on some of my recordings, and I said, well, let's sort of go to this kind of a folk chamber ensemble.
Right.
And I picked some unusual stuff, wrote a bunch of stuff, and put together an album that was kind of unlike anything that had been done at the time, and put it out there. And you know, you're casting your bread on the waters with these kind of things. And it happened to, for a lot of reasons, caught on. And
You'll be recreating that tonight.
We'll be recreating a lot of that material, yeah.
And you have created 36 recordings, as I count them, which is amazing. But this latest one, 22 Days, has a number of very compelling songs, and I want to get to one of them. It's a song called "Forgotten," about a 14-year-old girl killed by the Taliban.
Actually, just lest your listeners lament too much. She actually wasn't killed. She was shot.
Okay.
Malala Yousafzai is her name, and this was a news story a little over a year ago. And when I heard it, I was just like most people. This is a young girl in Pakistan who was a big campaigner for education of women, which the Taliban opposes. And she was so outspoken that they actually sought her out and shot her. And of late, you know, John Stewart just had her on for
an extended interview.
And she was a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize. And, you know, it's one of these things that I wrote simply because, I wrote a lot of songs based on the day's news in hopes of rescuing them from the inevitable death after the 24-hour news cycles has chewed them up and spit them out. And this is one of those stories that had legs.
This is a song, "Forgotten," by John McCutcheon, off the album 22 Days.
Kind friends, come listen to the tale I'll tell about a bit of heaven in the midst of hell. Malala Yousafzai of Pakistan, she was a target of the Taliban. She is our daughter, she is our dream, she is our future, she is 14. On her way from school at the edge of town, they stopped her bus and they shot her down. But we will not waste our time with tears. We'll not reward you with our fears. We will not curse you. We'll not regret you. We will not recall you. We will forget you. What kind of men would do these deeds? What kind of hatred? What kind of creeds would see a child as but a threat? The cost of cowardice is we'll forget, and we will not waste our time with tears. Will not reward you with our fears. We will not curse you. Will not regret you. We will not recall you. We will forget you. You'll disappear without a trace. All of history we will erase. Your names and deeds, all dark and twisted. You are not memory. You have not existed. For learning throughout this world, She cried out courage despite her fear. She stood for Pakistan. We will stand up here, and we will not waste our time with tears. We'll not reward you with our fears. We will not curse you. We'll not regret you. We will not recall you. We will forget you. No, we will not curse you. We'll not regret you. We will not recall you. We will forget you. Malala Yousafzai, we will remember first day of school each September. She is our daughter, she is our dream, she is our future, she is 14.
The song Forgotten by John McCutcheon off of his new CD, 22 Days, about 14-year-old Malala Yousafzai, who is more of an activist, John, than she was before she was shot by the Taliban.
It's amazing what courage dredges up in people, isn't it?
But what does this say about the way women are treated by some people in that part of the world, and indeed the attitude some people have toward women everywhere in the world?
Well, you know, all I can speak to is in this song was the resistance that she put up to the mere education of women. And it's, you know,
knowledge is power, isn't
it? It is. And like the events of September 11th, it's espoused by a tiny minority of a particular people. And, you know, you can't paint it too much of a broad brush, but people growing up in a world that is so interconnected now, it's impossible to ignore the fact that you can see what things are happening, both good and bad, all over the world. And you kind of triangulate your position in your society and in your time, mm-hmm, based on what you see happening elsewhere in the world. And in the case of Malala Yousafzai, her father was a great proponent of education. She grew up in her nuclear family, believing that this was important, this was a right, and her mere espousal of that made her a target. And I figured that her actions deserved a little bit of my time in memorializing it.
If you just joined us, we're talking to John McCutcheon, whose 36th album is called 22 Days. He'll be performing tonight with a group of world-class acoustic musicians at the Rothschild Pavilion. It's a benefit for the Neighbor's Place. You can get tickets at 842-0988 through the Performing Arts Foundation, and John will have a group of world-class musicians with him. I want to play another selection. I think we're going to play just portions of three more of the songs on this CD. This is a song called Tonight. It's about a man driven to violence by mountaintop removal.
This mountain before. Back then I was underground, drilling instead for the black gold that lay in the ore. I was raised in these hills, I have fished every stream, I hunted the woods and the hollers. Now those memories haunted, so are my dreams, by the bastards who reckon in dollars. day when my granddad was young, they came with their hat in their hand. Lies flowed like honey right off from their tongues. Was a quarter an acre for land. Then they came with machines, stripped these hills to the bones, backed up with their deeds and their guns. They threw women in jail for defending their homes. Even God won't forgive what they've done. Now I'm sick and I'm tired and I'm pissed off and wired, and I know I got nothing to lose. It ain't wrong, it ain't right, but tonight is the night, and there ain't nothing left of this fuse.
John McCutcheon, you lived for a while in Appalachia, where mountaintop removal is such a big concern.
Well, when I left Wausau back in 1972, I was heading south on a 3-month independent study to study with banjo players around the Appalachian area. And that's a 3-month independent study that I am still on, over 40 years later. So I lived in Appalachia for most of my life, actually. And yeah, it was one of the first things I ran into when I went south. I'd be going into communities just to, you know, meet a banjo player, and this banjo player wasn't just a banjo player. He might be a coal miner. He might be, you know, on the local city council. He might have, you know, all kinds of identities beyond just playing this instrument. And one of the things that was happening in an awful lot of communities is, was dealing with their water supply, which was being impacted, their farmlands. Who owned the rights to their land? And you know, generations earlier, the mineral rights had been sold off, and in a thing called the broad form deed, they were, you know, it gave the people who owned the mineral rights carte blanche to get to those minerals in any way possible. So they had the law on their side. They had all the money on their side. They had the power on their side, and the communities I was in were trying to equalize that.
And you can see those scars on that mountain range from outer space.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's really quite remarkable. The first thing that I will be doing after I return home to Georgia, after the winter solstice tour, will be driving up to Harlan County, Kentucky, and I'll be driving through a panorama of mountaintop removal. Strip mining is what they called it back in 1972.
You know, there's a fight going on over a massive iron mine that's planned in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior. It's a mine that some have compared to the mountaintop removal in the Appalachians. Do you see a comparison?
Well, any time that you're going to make huge topographical changes in a particular environment, you're going to see things that are going to be affected at the water table, for instance, being the most obvious. But what kind of chemical runoff happens? What happens with, you know, the stuff that they take out to get to the mineral? It's, you know, it doesn't even matter if it's flat or mountainous.
And it's, you know, the age-old fight between jobs and development and people who respect our natural environment. You know, the Bad River Tribe is right there. That those hills are sacred to them.
And I have always contended that there's a false war being put on between the economy and the environment. And it depends on the real fight is between short-term and long-term visions of what our communities and what our economy is really going to be like. Appalachia was essentially, in the case of coal mining, was served up as the sacrificial lamb so that the rest of the country could have their lights on. And now that the coal mining industry is waning there, you're seeing the results of it, where they're saying, sorry, there's nothing we can do. We haven't made any plans other than this. Thank you very much for the last 100 years.
Singer-songwriter John McCutcheon, he's back in his old hometown of Wausau. He'll be performing tonight at the Rothschild Pavilion. If you'd like to share your thoughts with John, our phone lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. It's 1-800-780-9742. John, we're going to play a little bit of another song off of the new CD. It's a song about immigrants. It's called Nothing Like You.
I'm who you hire when you want the work cheap. Pay me in cash, your secret I'll keep. I'm the one that you call when you got work to do. You just know my first name. I'm nothing like you. I work in the kitchen where I won't be seen. I take out the trash and see your dishes are clean. I'll do anything that the boss tells me to. I can build a whole house, sir. I'm nothing like you.
John, do you have any specific experiences with immigrants that caused you to write that song, or is this more reflective of this vast underclass that we've got in America doing the labor that so much of us depend on?
Well, this isn't a new issue. Any student of history knows that in the early 20th century there were huge anti-immigrant campaigns. But more than even about the issue of immigration, I wanted to write a song about the other and those things in which those ways in which we feel we're very, very different from those people who are around us. But I wanted to write it from the opposite perspective that you would have expected.
And if nothing else, this certainly, anyone who listens to it, it's got to make them more sensitive to the humanity of the people doing much of the hard physical labor in this society.
Well, you asked if I had any personal experience. When I was writing this, I realized, yeah, there's a guy who comes by and does, you know, helps me with work in the yard every now and again. And I realized I didn't know his last name. I'm as guilty as anybody else. I'm not, you know, there's nothing particularly self-righteous about this song, you know. I pay him in cash. I didn't know Luis's last name, Luis Alvarez.
You know it now.
I know it now. This was an indictment of my distance from that. It's not planting my flag and saying I'm better than anybody else, because I am not. I'm no expert. I'm just a guy who tells stories. And sometimes the stories hopefully ring true, and maybe they make you feel uncomfortable, but, you know, art and music is not supposed to be mere cotton candy for the ears.
Let's go to the phones right now. We have Jackie in Drummond. Jackie, you're on Route 51 with John McCutcheon.
Well, John, I'm a volunteer at WOJB, and I'm sure you're familiar with Eric in WOJB.
I am. I did a show for WOJB up
in
there.
In Rice Lake.
That's right.
And I was there. So I have two comments, but just listening to this song, now this is a new comment I just thought about. You're playing that song. Did you get your idea from the old folk song, Deportee, that they sing? Do you know that song?
The old Woody Guthrie song?
Oh, yeah. I recorded that song on my last album.
And, you know, that's the anonymity of all of our immigrants. That emphasizes that. So that was really good. Secondly, I really like all your current songs and commentary. But because I volunteer every week, I use your summer, winter, fall, spring songs for my theme, and then also your bicycle songs, so you really play a big part in my show. But this question I always ask any folk singer I hear, you know, you stood the test of time, John Prine, Peter Mayer, John Lee Murdoch, but in my head, I don't have really current folk singers that I feel, you know, that I'm a groupie like you. Do you think there are people who are going to be as long-lasting?
Folk singers in their 20s.
Well, you know, I don't want to make any presumptions, but, you know, we tend to listen to and identify with those people who are speaking to our generation. And there are a lot of wonderful younger singers and songwriters and folk musicians who are writing stuff that maybe sounds different to our ears, but is resonating with a whole new group of people. It's really exciting to hear them.
Thank you so much for the phone call. Let's go to Ray in Rhinelander right now. Ray, you're on with John McCutcheon.
Yes, I just want to thank him very much for everything he's done. He's a ray of hope yet for all of us who come from that time frame. I remember running into you here and there in Wausau back in the early years when there was little cafes and there was a music scene going on there that was different. And, you know, it's just really nice to talk with you and see that you're still on the planet doing whatever needs to be done, and your music is great, and everybody that you touch and have been involved with has been touched by that also. So I'm just glad there are still people like you that actually really care and are trying to do something, because there's only one planet, and we have to have clean water. We have to have equal rights, you know, and it's worldwide, and I'm glad you're involved that way. So thank you very much, and keep on doing it, and have a good day.
Well, thank you. You too. And, you know, what I'm doing is really just a small part of, well, an example is tonight. I'm here to support the Neighbor's Place. And it's, you know, we all do our part to help make our communities stronger and better places to live. You know, Wausau is in central Wisconsin. It's the place I grew up. They sustained my family. They made me who I am. And so to be able to come back every couple of years and lend a hand to support a great local organization like the Neighbor's Place, you know, I come in for, you know, and play for a couple hours and people stand up and give me standing ovations. But the people who really sustain these communities, people like the Neighbor's Place, they rarely get the appreciation they deserve. So I'm just honored and thrilled that I can come back in and help
out. Here. John McCutcheon, he'll be performing at the Rothschild Pavilion tonight. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. When we come back, John is going to play some live music for you from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, enigmatic glass artwork by Wisconsin native David Hutchthausen, along with contemporary jewelry and vessels fashioned from precious metals and stones, comprise two new exhibitions on view through January 19th. More at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. John McCutcheon is with us live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. You can see him tonight at the Rothschild Pavilion in a benefit for the Neighbor's Place. John is going to perform some live music for us right now. John, what are we going to listen to?
Let's see. This is another song off of the new album, 22 Days. And I guess I've been writing a lot of in recent years about the coming to terms with aging. I'm of an age when tomorrow is not promised. Each day is a gift, and I raise a prayer of thanks when I can take a good long piss. Sleep uninterrupted in a bed or in a chair, and my glasses are exactly where I left them there. I am of an age when I fall in love more easily than I did at first, with babies and with old dogs, with the unwashed and the cursed.
I forget what I remember that made me mad and haunted. Keeps a promised joy at bay from all I claimed I wanted. I am of an age when I have seen myself at my best and at my worst. I have had enough good whiskey. I no longer know the thirst. I can speak of God without embarrassment or worry. I know the time is short, but I nonetheless won't hurry. I am of age. I am of an age. When I too often say I love you, I can cry without regret. Boots that fit still matter, and some things I will forget. When boots that fit still matter, and memory is long, when dancing is familiar, and I still break out in song, I am of age. When I am humbled by my ignorance, wisdom is a crown. I will reach for Carmen's hands as the day is dying down. There are books I'll never read, and songs I'll leave unwritten. In death as in this life, still by wonder I'll be smitten. I'm of an age. And I know there'll come a time when my voice will not be heard, so I savor every melody. Careful with each word. And I'll leave this work to others and forgive their youthful faults. And I'll take my place among the world of memory and thoughts. I am of an age.
John McCutcheon, Of an Age, is one of many great songs on his new CD, 22 Days, and he will be performing tonight at the Rothschild Pavilion. John, can we hear Christmas in the Trenches? Is that something you can do for us here?
Yes, I have the technology. I've been known to sing that song from time to time. It's interesting, you know, when I was putting together the music for Winter Solstice back in 1984, I was 2 weeks shy of going into the studio to record the album. We had everything together and we worked out the arrangements, but I just had this feeling that something was missing. I was doing a show in Birmingham, Alabama, and a backstage janitor happened into my dressing room quite by accident. And she was an older black woman, and she and I just started telling jokes back and forth, the way you do with strangers that you meet every now and again. And the inevitable knock on the door came saying, you know, 2 minutes. And I said to her, okay, I got to go to work myself now, and you got to get back to work. So time for one more. Tell me your favorite story. And she told me the story of the 1914 Christmas truce. And it was so out of character with everything that we had, you know, it'd been jokes back and forth, trying to one up the other, the way you do. And this was not a joke, and it wasn't expected. And it was so stark and so beautiful the way she told it, because it was her favorite, that my immediate thought was, ah, there it is. That's what's missing from this album. And I did the shortest first set I'd probably ever done, because all I could think about was getting back in the dressing room and having 15 or 20 minutes to sit down and just write this song. And so this was one of those songs that there's some songs you write and some you just write down. And this is one of the latter. It just came out nearly completely formed.
It wrote itself.
So I can speak of it with a little bit dispassionately, because it was a gift. I don't mean to get too woo-woo, because I'm not that kind of a guy, but I also know as a writer that we don't know
where things come
from.
We
really don't know how this all works and when we're in the right place at the right time. But what's even more amazing is it's a true story. My name is Francis Tolliver. I come
from Liverpool. 2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. To Belgium and to Flanders, to Germany to here, I fought for king and country I love dear. It was Christmas in the trenches, where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were still, no Christmas songs were sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day, the brave and glorious lads so far away. Well, I was lying with my messmates on the cold and rocky ground, when across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, me boys, each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. Singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me, soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent, the gas clouds rolled no more, as Christmas brought us respite from the war. Well, as soon as they were finished and a reverent pause was spent, God rest ye merry gentlemen, struck up some lads from Kent. The next they sang was Stille Nacht, to Silent Night says I, and in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, the frontline sentry cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure trudging from their side. His truce flag like Christmas star shone on that plain so bright, as he bravely strode unarmed into the night. Soon one by one on either side walked into no man's land. With neither gun nor bayonet, we met there hand to hand. We shared some secret brandy, and we wished each other well. And in a flare-lit soccer game, we gave him hell. We traded chocolates, cigarettes, and photographs from home. These sons and fathers far away from families of their own. Young Sanders played his squeeze box. They had a violin, this curious and unlikely band of men. Stole upon us, and France was France once more. With sad farewells we each began to settle back to war. But the question haunted every heart that beat that wondrous night, whose family have I fixed within my sight? It's Christmas in the trenches, where the frosts a bitter hung. Frozen fields of France were warmed as songs of peace were sung. For the walls they kept between us to exact the word of war had been crumbled and gone forevermore. Oh, my name is Francis Tolliver, in Liverpool I dwell. Each Christmas come since World War I, as well, that the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame, and on each end of the rifle we're the same.
We're back with John McCutcheon on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. John, you grew up in central Wisconsin. You attended St. James grade school, graduated from Newman Catholic High School. Your hometown has changed quite a bit since then. What do you think of the changes that have taken place?
Well, I don't know that I can speak very, you know, knowledgeably about that. When I come back to visit Wausau, my dad still lives here, and so I come back to visit him and my
sister. So you got family and friends?
I do. I have lots of friends that I went to school with. And so, I come and I visit my friends, and I usually end up at the Grand Theater, which is just fantastic. I mean, I remember going to see the Grand Theater when it was a crummy, crumbling down movie theater for the PTA 10-cent Saturday morning matinees when I was a kid. And I remember the first time I walked on stage there after the renovation, and it was just stunning. Because I came from backstage.
Right.
I hadn't gone through the lobby or anything like that, so it was really fantastic. It's, you know, like anybody who's been gone for 40 years, Wausau's grown a lot. It's, you know, there's some places I can't figure out how to get to anymore.
It's a more diverse place than it used to be.
It certainly seems that way. And when my mother began working, and my mother has been dead almost 30 years now, when my mother began working with the Neighbor's Place years ago, it was primarily serving the new Hmong community that was growing here in central Wisconsin. And so that was my original connection to it. But yeah, Wausau is a very, very different place.
I want to squeeze in one more phone call. Let's go to Wynn in Wausau. And Wynn, we're running out of time, so if you could make it quick.
I can make it quick. John, this is Wynn Spencer on 9th Avenue, where you used to stop by periodically with Mary.
Yep.
And I just wanted to say I'm thoroughly enjoying your concert. I'm not able to get to the program this evening. So good luck. God bless you for coming back, and have a good day.
Well, Ms. Spencer, thanks a lot for putting up with that big rowdy crowd of, you know, hormone-seething kids that used to show up at your house. I think they all turned out surprisingly well.
It did.
Thanks, Wynn.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Wynn, thanks so much for the phone call. And, John, tonight you are, once again, recreating the Winter Solstice album that came out in 1984. You've got world-class acoustic musicians performing with you at the Rothschild Pavilion. I think what we're going to do is leave with a piece called Babylon Is Falling. Could you set that up
for
us?
Well, one of the things that we're doing tonight is we're probably half the material is from the Winter Solstice album. The other half is material that is more newly written and things that I just love to do when I get together. As a soloist, I don't get to play with people very often. And so they're all great singers. And one of the things I fell in love with when I went south was the old fashioned shape note singing. And this is an example of the kind of thing we're going to do tonight.
John, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks for coming back to your hometown. We need to come back more often.
I love it, and I will.
John McCutcheon, it's been a delightful hour with you. We do want to thank today's special guest, John McCutcheon. The new CD, 22 Days, has been released on the Apple Songs label. You can see him tonight, Thursday night, as he brings his Winter Solstice tour to the Rothschild Pavilion. All proceeds benefiting the Neighbor's Place Food Pantry. Tickets at the door tonight or in advance through the Performing Arts Foundation at 715-842-0988. You can find out more about John and his music at his website, folkmusic.com. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. And thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.